Today, this is Saturday, 13th July, 2024. We all gathered here for another session of Mindfulness for Beginners program. I would like to welcome, on behalf of all of us, joining from Nisaranawane Poras Monastery, Most Venerable Dhammakusala Thero. And also, I would like to welcome all other Venerables joining through the live stream. And also, I would like to welcome everyone joining the session today. If I give you a bit of a rundown, the structure of the program today, we're going to start with the Dhamma talk, which will be about overthinking is the topic today. And then we will present to you the mindfulness reports and the instruction for mindfulness for beginners. And then we conclude the program today. I would like to welcome Venerable Dhammakusala Thero for giving the talk today, which is overthinking. Over to you, Bhante.
Hello, everyone. As usual, we'll take a few minutes to do our daily practice. And after the practice, we can go into the talk for today. Today, I thought maybe we can take a few minutes to do a walking session. Mindful walking practice we can do. So all of us will find some space, probably like 10-15 feet space would do. And we start walking in a comfortable manner. We walk in a comfortable manner. And what are we trying to do? We try to be mindful of our walking. Usually when we walk, we are not mindful of our walking. We are not aware that our body is walking, that we are walking. When we do our mindful practice, we walk in a comfortable manner and we try to be aware of our walking. And when you continue like this, you start to notice the walking body. You may feel the feet touching the ground. You may feel various other bodily sensations related to walking. You may feel the ground, the texture, temperature. So we try to continue our mindfulness with the walking process. We try to take more conscious steps. And when we try to do this, it's natural that our mind goes to different surrounding things. For example, the sights you see, they grab your attention. Surrounding sounds, various thoughts, memories, our attention goes with these things. Initially, we don't know, but after a while, we can be aware that our attention has wandered and we can return back to the walking body. Again, try to take few mindful steps, conscious steps. Try to be aware of your walking at least for a few seconds. Again, naturally the mind goes to various objects. You can repetitively become aware that you are getting lost and return your attention back to the body. So that's what we are going to do. All of us, let's join a walking session and try to do a few minutes of practice. Okay, everyone, now you can return back to your seats. That's few minutes of mindful walking, just to give you an idea, so you can practice on your own. Nadeep, with that, you can take over.
Thank you very much, Bhante. I think I mixed up the today's program structure. I should have given the in-session mindfulness instruction, sorry, the session at the beginning, but I think because I came unprepared, so I have to apologize, Bhante, and all the participants. Okay, now we're going to start our next topic, next Dhamma talk, which is about the topic today, overthinking. I would like to hand over to Bhante again. Over to you, Bhante.
Okay, everyone. Today we have a relatable topic which most of us are facing. So we'll see how we can talk a little bit about this topic and what's the suggestion or the solution that we can give through the practice of mindfulness. Now, when we talk about overthinking, usually that happens. Some people, they think a lot. They plan a lot. Whatever things that happen, they think about them a lot. Whatever the impending situation, occasions, they plan for them a lot. So this way, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, these thinking processes are there. That happens. And let's say in today's world, knowledge is promoted. They say you have to gather a lot of knowledge. If you go through this exam, if you go through these degrees, if you get this qualification, you'll be a knowledgeable person. That way, in this world, today's world, most of us are encouraged to acquire knowledge. Knowledge. The world appreciates smart people. They say you have to be smart, you have to gather all these things, knowledge, information, and that's how you can thrive in this world. Intelligence is appreciated. Being smart is appreciated. But the funny thing is that happiness in intelligent people, smart people, it is one of the rarest things to find. Usually intelligent people, smart people, they are unhappy. Why? What is the reason? Because they have a huge capacity to think. They can analyze everything. They can reason. They can memorize. So this way, the very ability of your mind becomes a hindrance for them. And at the end of the day, you are not happy. You have a lot of knowledge, information, but you are not happy. You have acquired great qualifications, still you are not happy. You have a family, whatever the material things that are necessary, still you are not happy. Sometimes you go and become a part of the temple, part of the committee, but still you are not happy. So whatever you get, still you are not happy. Your mind creates this unhappiness in you. Again and again you complain, again and again you try to find a solution. The very capacity of your mind, the very ability of your mind has become an hindrance for you, and you can't find peace, you can't find happiness. That's why they say peace of mind in intelligent people, or happiness in intelligent people. That's one of the rarest things. If you are not that intelligent, maybe you can easily survive this world, especially today's world with all these troubles, chaos. If you are ignorant, maybe it would be easier to survive, because you don't see things as much. You don't remember things as much. You don't analyze things as much. Maybe it is easier that way. But most people, the greater the capacity they have in their minds, the more they are suffering. They complain. They worry. So the very capacity of our mind has gone against us. It's against us. It's harming us. So they have this very nice analogy about this. They say that this is a very sharp tool. This is a very sharp tool. The mind is a very sharp tool. Whatever the things you can do with it. This very mind has created all these things in the outside world. Let it be the buildings, architecture. Let it be other art or creations. Whatever it is, this mind has created. The technology this mind has created. So it's an advanced tool. It's a sharp tool. But what happens is that this sharp tool is given to a monkey. Monkey doesn't know how to handle this. Monkey doesn't know how to use this tool properly. So what happens at the end of the day? End of the day, the monkey will harm itself. The monkey will harm others. This very sharp tool is going against the monkey. So that's the same thing that's happened to us. It's a very sharp tool. Greater the capacity, more and more you suffer due to this tool. More you can remember, more you can recall, more you can analyze, more you can think, greater you are suffering, because you don't know how to handle this tool. That's the issue. That's the idea. It's like a sharp tool given to a monkey. The monkey doesn't know how to handle it. So at the end of the day, it ends up harming itself. So it's important that we get to know how to handle this tool. Some people, they say that we should make the tool blunt, less harmful. Those are the ways to take drugs and the mind is dialed down for a while. You indulge in something else, you forget the problems for a while. You travel, go on a trip, for a few hours, few days, the thinking, the worries stop. But as soon as you come to a stop, as soon as you recover from your drugs, again the same problem returns. So the tool is sharp. There's no point in making this tool blunt. That won't work. That's not the proper way. You can't damage the tool and avoid this harm. That's not the proper way. Instead, we have to find a proper technique how to handle this tool. What is the way to handle this tool? If you don't know that, then you become victim to overthinking. You become victim to depression, and you become victim to probably even suicide. In this new world, those things are real. Those things are solid. Even today, there was a new yogi who came here, probably like 30 years old. And that young man, he is saying that he is suffering from depression, severe depression. And is there a solution in the practice? The people are asking. Can I get relief from the practice? They are asking. When you go into a severe depression, maybe you have to take even the practice, you have to take it slow. In this practice, we mainly recommend it as a preventive measure, not as a corrective measure. Of course, corrective, it can do, it can help, but still, it would be much wiser to use it as a preventive measure. Otherwise, sometimes it's too late. For some people, it might be too late, right? So they come, they ask at the last moment. They think that magically this practice will do something to their mental health. But that's not the reality. That's not how it works. You have to go through the practice. It's a difficult process. If you are suffering with a severe depression, maybe it's not the time. Maybe you have to take a break. When you recover for a while, you can come back and do, right? So that way, people are asking, what's the solution? Most people, they have various techniques, suggestions, but they can't tell the exact solution. In your thoughts, in your memories, all this overthinking, you feel like you are lost. That lost feeling is very true. It is real, it is valid. Others can't come and tell you that it's not real, these are only thoughts, let go of thoughts. That popular word, letting go, they will tell you, let go of these things, don't worry. But is it realistic? Is it practical? You go to an overthinker and tell them to let go. Will it be possible? That's the thing. It's a habitual behavior of the mind. You can't change it just by a suggestion. You can't change it just by advice. That's not how it works. Instead, it's a hard process, difficult process, painstaking process, but you have to go through it slowly. Little by little, you have to take that approach. What is the approach, one may ask? Initially, you feel lost. Now, let's say the person I was talking about earlier, the person, the boy who is suffering with depression, when they start the practice, they feel utterly lost. They think that practice is creating more chaos, more difficulty. That's natural, that's true. That very feeling you get when you start the practice, even healthy people, mentally healthy, they too feel this. When they start the practice, they start to feel the real nature of this mind. Maybe for decades, you have been ignorant about the real nature of your mind. Maybe you can spend an entire lifetime being ignorant about the reality of your mind. That's how people live. But as soon as you start practicing mindfulness, you start to feel the real nature. The reality hits you suddenly. So it's natural that you come and complain. Let's say even the healthy people, they feel too much resistance in the beginning. It is true, it is natural. But what we are saying is, before you change your mind, first you have to be conscious of the problem. You have to understand the problem first. Only after understanding the problem, you can find a solution. That is very true even for the practice of mindfulness. As soon as you sit, as soon as you do mindful walking, as soon as you try to do your daily activities mindfully, you feel the problem. So the very first step is to understand the problem. Maybe to understand that you have this overthinking issue. Maybe to understand that you have these past things that are destroying the present moment. Maybe you have to understand that your mind is all over the place. That very understanding is important. That is the very first step, right? So don't get discouraged when you start your practice, when you feel the resistance in your mind, when the reality hits you, don't get discouraged. We have to tell them time after time that this is the very first step. This is how it becomes apparent. For your entire lifetime, you have been ignorant of the reality. You have been ignorant of the nature of your mind. But now, for the very first time, you are conscious. That very consciousness is important. Although it may not feel pleasant, that consciousness is important. You are aware, you know that this is the nature of my mind. Right? So whenever a person starts this practice, they face this. They come and complain. But we have to tell them that is the very first step. Now you are in the process. Long way to go, but you have started your journey. That's important. That's important. It's natural to feel lost. It's natural to feel lost. You tell them that it's natural. I too have gone through the same phase. During those days, those months, I too felt the lost feeling. I was doubtful whether this could find me some kind of a refuge. I was doubtful whether this is the solution, right? So you have to tell them that it's natural. This is the very first step. And with that, they will ask, what should I do? What should I do? My mind is all over the place. What should I do? I can't sit for even a few minutes. What should I do? Walking, my mind goes to every object in the surrounding. What should I do? They will ask. So you have to naturally or gradually let them understand the bodily sensations. Usually people, when they go for their practice, let's say sitting, walking, they have this preconceived idea of a primary object, right? The most popular one is breath. They say, even without starting the practice, they say, I'm doing breath meditation. Right. I came here to do breath meditation. That way they say, even yesterday I asked from somebody, do you feel the breath? Or is your breath forceful? So this person is saying, I don't feel the breath. The breath I am forcing. Why? Because I came here to do breath meditation. Right. That's not the proper approach. Instead, you sit comfortably and see what is the prominent object in your body. It could be the breath at your nostrils, or it could be the furthest end of the breath, which is the belly. Or it could be your bodily sensations, the pressure. Or it could be some kind of a vibration, who knows. So just sit for a while and see what becomes apparent. Just walk for a few minutes and see what becomes apparent in this walking process. Whatever the sensation that is easier, whatever the sensation that becomes apparent, we take it as the primary object. Let's say sitting, one day the primary object could be the breath at your nostrils. Next day the primary object could be some kind of a vibration, who knows, right? So it's much easier to go with the flow, accept whoever that's there, and continue your practice. What we do is we pick a prominent bodily sensation as the anchor to hold our attention or the mindfulness. That sensation you have to understand. So let's say this new person or an overthinker, we tell them, just walk for a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes, and see What is the sensation that becomes apparent in your walking body? Just sit for like 10-15 minutes and see what is the prominent sensation that becomes apparent in your seated body. You have to let them experience it. You can't tell them to observe this particular object. You can't go into meditation with a preconceived idea of an object. That's not how it works. Instead, you tell them, go walk and come. Walk for 20-30 minutes and come. Sit for 10-15 minutes and come. Then tell us what is the most prominent sensation in your walking body. What is the most prominent sensation in your sitting body? So that is our primary object. We call it the primary object. And we tell them, okay, now you have identified your primary object. Now let's say, can you at least observe or be mindful of this primary object for a single moment? Then they say, yes, that's how I have noticed it. That's how I have noticed the walking. That's how I have noticed in the sitting. So they can be mindful of this primary object. At least for a single moment, they can be mindful. But the natural complaint from these overthinkers, they say that I can't hold my attention there. My mind is all over the place. I feel lost. I get all these thoughts, memories. The primary object disappears. That's their natural complaint. But you have to tell them, that's okay, that's natural, that's just understanding the problem or the issue. But you know what the primary object should be. You know what the primary object is. That very knowing is important. And you can, for a single breath, for a single step, you can observe that primary object. That ability you have, right? So we say one breath at a time, one step at a time. Just be mindful for a single breath. Don't worry about the next breath. Just be mindful of a single step. Don't worry about the next one. While you are having your meals, just be mindful of a single bite, the one you are having. Can you do that? That's a question that we have to ask. Usually people like to plan. They plan the next step, right? They plan how to be mindful of the next step while missing the step happening in the present moment. They plan next breath, how to be mindful of the next breath while missing the breath that's happening in the present moment. They plan the next bite while eating the bite that you're having and while missing it, right? More you overthink, you plan further ahead. Sometimes you plan 10 bites ahead. Sometimes you plan 10 steps ahead. Sometimes you plan 10 breaths ahead, right? That's the nature of the overthinking. So it's natural that you feel lost. It's natural that you should feel lost because of this planning process, this overthinking process. So we say one breath at a time, can you be mindful? One step at a time, can you be mindful? One bite at a time, can you be mindful? That's the advice you have to tell them. Don't tell them to hold the attention for 100 breaths. That's not possible. Instead, tell them that at least single breath can you observe. The breath happening in the present moment, one breath at a time. So I heard this very nice story. It says that a boy got lost in a dark forest. He had his horse with him. So the horse and the boy, they are trying to find a way out. And it's getting darker and darker. Right? The boy is getting worried. He's anxious. He's fearful. So he's asking the horse, how can we get out of this trouble? We are lost in this dark forest. How can we escape this? I can't see where to go. I can't see the direction. that I should go. It is getting darker and darker. I can't see now. The boy is complaining. So the horse is asking, can you see your next step? Then the boy says, yes, that is very close. I can see my next step. Okay, then let's move forward one step at a time. Don't think about the forest. Don't let the forest overwhelm you. Instead, take one step at a time. Usually what happens is that dark, scary forest, it overwhelms us. That's what happens usually. But the practitioner, it's like the overthinking. It's like this overthinking process. It's like a dark, scary forest. You feel lost in this forest. It is natural that you feel fearful, you feel lost. But yeah, the proper advice would be, can you see the next breath or the breath that's happening? Can you take this step mindfully? That is the way. That is the way. That's how you have to be mindful. That's how you have to practice. So tell them, just allow those thoughts to complain. Don't get overwhelmed by these overthinking processes. Don't get overwhelmed by this dark, scary forest. Instead, can you observe one breath, single breath at a time? Can you observe, can you be mindful, single step at a time? That approach is really valid. That works. Even there's this person who came for a retreat, and for the very first time, that person came. And the retreat, it feels like something big. 10 days. 10 days sounds like scary. 10 days is too much. So for a beginner, that's how they feel. Even when I started, I felt it. Right? So you can't go through a single night. How can I get through 10 days? Right? So that the doubting happens, it feels too much, it feels too overwhelming. So these people, they usually complain. So to this person, my advice was, take one day at a time. Don't think about tomorrow, don't think how many more days you have. Instead, just take one day at a time. Just take today and try to go through the timetable. Many hours of meditation. According to timetable, you are supposed to do probably like 8 hours. Too much. 8 hours is a challenge, of course. And your body is not supporting. You are not used to walk like this. You are not used to sit like this. All the bodily aches, pains come. All this mental turmoil come. All the overthinking processes come. So it is natural that you get overwhelmed and you feel like this 10 days target is impossible. That's how you feel. But the advice would be to take one day at a time. Just forget about tomorrow. Just take today and do your timetable. Continue. And when it comes to tomorrow, we'll deal with it tomorrow. That approach would work. And that person started 10 days of meditation. And today it's been 6 days now. Over the hump. Over the hump. So now only few more days to go. Right? So you take one day at a time and you somehow survive that day. Tomorrow we'll deal with it tomorrow. That approach would work, especially when it comes to things like overthinking. You feel like there's no way out of this process. And that very worrying is also overthinking. That's the irony behind this. That very worrying about worrying, that too is overthinking. Right? So that way you continue. That way you continue. And one step at a time, one breath at a time, one bite at a time, you try to continue your practice. And then only we can come to today's idea. Bit complicated, bit deep into the overthinking, right? The quote says, overthinking is quite simple to me. It comes from all the parts that we have disowned, pushed away, wanting to be accepted and incorporated with love and respect, right? So this idea, when you mature in your practice only, maybe at least after doing few weeks of practice only, you can understand this concept, right? So what's the cause of overthinking? What are those past memories? What are those future worries? Right? When you walk, why do they appear? When you do your mindful sitting, why do they appear? Right? What are they? Usually these things, they are unresolved. Some of them, you have refused to accept the responsibility for them. Of course, we have certain incidents in our past, certain memories in our past. It's much easier for us to deny the responsibility for those incidents. Maybe even for some people, right? That helps in short term. But what happens is that these things are hidden in our mind. You have refused to accept the responsibility for these things, and they are hidden in a dark corner of your mind. As soon as you let go of your usual process, as soon as you stop, when I say stop, I mean like the practice. We are always running in our mind. When you do mindful walking, when you do mindful sitting, you are stopping for a while. That is why we say accepting the present moment. That is like stopping, right? So when you stop for a while, then only these dark things start to peak. They appear, right? So that's why the quote says they are either disowned or pushed away. So they come. They create these memories, they create this complaining, judgment, maybe blaming oneself, blaming others. So these things appear. So these are maybe like psychological wounds in us. And in practice, not initially, but with time you start to feel them. Maybe certain incidents you can't even remember. It wasn't, you weren't even aware that you have these things in your memory. Maybe it's childhood incidents, people who have separated from you in your childhood, right? So these things come. So when they come, first thing you have to realize is that so far you have pushed them away. That is why you didn't allow your mind to process these things. You didn't accept the responsibility for these things. That's why they are coming. That's why it's happening. Right? So the very first thing is acceptance. It could be difficult, could be painful. You feel like reliving that very incident time after time. Right? In your mind, in your meditation, you feel like you are going through that very incident. Although the physical factors are not there, in your mind, in your emotional pain, you feel the same. Right? It feels like you are reliving that very experience, traumatic experience, and you feel the very same pain in you, the emotional pain. Right? That's how it is becoming apparent initially. But in your meditation, you can see that these things come. They appear like waves. Sometimes they appear, last for a while, then they disappear. Again, some other day, they appear, last for a while, they disappear. So when these waves come, usually it is natural that the pain is there to suffer, but we have to accept them. They have become psychological wounds because we haven't accepted them. We have refused these incidents. We try to be ignorant of them and find a solution. Short term, it works. But in your mind, the dark corner of your mind, these wounds are still there, right? So the first thing is that these things are pushed away things. You haven't accepted responsibility for these things. Those things start to appear in your meditation, especially in your deep meditation. After few, not a shallow level of practice, but after few weeks, few months of practice, these things start to appear, right? Then what happens is that you have to accept. That's the second part. These things, they come wanting to be accepted and incorporated with love and respect, right? That's the very practice. We say, just let them come. Be conscious. Be conscious. Be mindful. Among these things, probably you can still notice the breath. Among these things, probably you can still notice the steps. You have to somehow go through this process. Don't let it be there for tomorrow. If you go through this process today, it would be much easier. Maybe difficult, but still, whatever comes, we tell them, don't, no longer push them away. Don't try that. Instead, accept. Accept and go through this today. It would be much easier for you to go through this today. If you have gone through them in the past, when those things happened, it would be much, much easier for you. But you didn't do that, right? Now they are in you, in your mind, as psychological wounds. And along the way, they have created so much chaos in your life. When the wounds are there, don't think that they are just staying quietly. No, they throw various pus and stuff, right? So that's why you feel anxiety, you feel stress, you feel like crying for no reason. Those things are apparent to people. They say, I feel like crying for no reason. I don't know why. I feel anxiety for no reason. I don't know why. I feel fearful for no reason. I don't know why. But when you dig deep into your mind, you realize this is because of a psychological wound. Maybe you get cancer towards the latter part of your life. You get these diseases. Why? In your mind, you are suffering. Don't think that it's just your body. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. You push these things away. You refuse to deal with them. You refuse to accept the responsibility for them. And they are there in your mind as psychological wounds. And when they surface, it's not easy. The sooner you deal with them, much easier it would be. Much easier it would be. Some people, when certain things happen, on the spot they deal with them, right? Maybe like for weeks they cry. Somehow they go through that process and somehow put it into bed. Most people, we feel like acting strong. Crying is we shouldn't be crying. I can survive this. I can somehow live through this. That way they don't mourn, right? They accept. They try to deny that. They try to be strong. They try to show strength to their family members. That way they do. But later on life, they face much greater difficulties due to these things, right? So that's why probably, I think in Rome, ancient Rome, they have suggested when your husband die, the widows, they can cry for 10 days only. They have to cry, 10 days you cry, then you stop, right? Probably in Sri Lanka also, we have like 7 days to mourn. Not sure whether you are truly mourning during that period, but still, somehow there's this 7 days margin. Then after 3 months, there's this occasion. After 1 year, there's this occasion, right? So that way, probably these ancient traditions, they do have some idea, right? In that ancient Rome, they say, when your husband dies, the widows, they can cry for 10 days or everything provided. The neighbors, the relatives, they will provide everything. You just cry, right? You just mourn. You just deal with your loss. That would be much better. Nowadays, what we do, we refuse, we push them away, we go to work, we try to act strong, right? At the end of the day, you end up suffering in greater scales, right? So in your practice, when these things come, although it may be difficult, although the emotional pain might be like reliving that very experience, it's much better to go through it. You don't have to do much. Just sit with it. What else can you do? When you sit with it, that is acceptance. That is acceptance with love. It could be a pain, but you welcome it with love. It could be suffering, but you welcome it love. Right? So that's the idea. That's the idea. Discord, it's not simply the shallow idea of overthinking, but this is much deeper into the practice. It is a good one. It is a good one. We have to understand these things. And when we practice after certain weeks, certain months, we might have to go through these episodes. When these episodes come, you have to welcome them. We are not encouraging, we are not asking for them. Instead, they come naturally. So you just sit with it. You walk with it. That's all you have to do. The thoughts are there, it's all over the place, you feel like crying, sometimes tears come. That's fine, just walk with it, just sit with it. That's a healing process. That's a healing process. So that way you have to heal little by little. And all these things, they don't come at once. It's not how it works. These wounds, they help us time to time. Sometimes the same wound come for like, initially it comes so strong, like a wave, those tsunami waves. Initially the first wave, it's the strongest. Then the second one comes. That too has a lot of power. Then the third one comes. When you go through 3, 4 waves, you realize now it has lost its power. No longer a problem, right? So that way, these memories, these emotional issues, emotional pain appear. The first wave, the second wave would be with so much power. But when you somehow survive, if you somehow survive, if you go through this process, then when it comes to third, fourth wave, you realize now it has lost its power. Now you can easily withstand it, right? So that way, little by little, you heal. And when you heal, you realize even these thinking things, this anxiety for no reason, fear for no reason, these things disappear. Your mind becomes much clearer, like a clear pond. It becomes. Earlier it was like a muddy pond. You don't feel, you don't know what's happening. Full of chaos. Now it is becoming much clearer. These particles are settling, right? So that's the approach. And if you take that approach, you can feel the comfort, the peace of that settled pond. Thank you for listening today.
Much merit, Dante. I think very pertinent talk for everyone's who deal with the day-to-day activities. Dante took us through how the problem arises and then how to tackle with it slowly. How we before the wave strikes, you have to start your practice, and then it's a slow process, but we have to go through that before the problem strikes us. So very excellent talk. Thank you very much, Bhante. Next, we are going to present today's report. Before that, I would like to invite Sonali to pick through the instruction for beginners, mindfulness for beginners first, and then we will present the mindfulness report today. With that, I would like to hand over to Sonali. Thank you.
Thank you, Nadeep. So to start with, I will share my screen. This is the beginner's guide to mindfulness. I hope you can see it. According to this, we have a couple of videos provided by the Nisarwane to help us start with our journey of mindfulness. This has a video of mindful walking and another one of mindful sitting. Set aside some time to watch these videos, or you can also help someone else who's starting. If they have asked you this question as well, send them these videos. We can share these links with you. Once you have watched them and have an understanding of how to start, any amount of start with 5 minutes if you have to, and then work your way up to 2 hours. It is the recommendation. So mindful walking and mindful sitting. And once you are aware, try to be mindful during the day at some point of a repetitive task. And once you have done some practice, we'd like to hear from you to see what your experiences were for the week. And if you could write it to us in a reflection report, as to what your own experience of mindful walking was, what your own experience of mindful sitting, and what your own experience of how you were mindful during the day as well, if possible. You could send these reports to us via the Google form. The link is provided here, or the email, which is beginnersmd@gmail.com. We will share all these details with you on the chat in a little while. Lastly, we also have all these sessions recorded. And if anyone requires the link for it, we can send it to you. I have had a few people reach out to me over email, and I have sent them these links. All the previous sessions are recorded on this link here. Or you could also find them on the Nisarwane website. If you guide your way around, you will be able to find these previous sessions as well. Now I will move on to the first report today. We have two reports received. The first report is from an adult. Mindful sitting. Sat on stool and adjusted the posture. At the beginning, the prominent breath and the details of it noted. But soon the breath was continuing naturally. Thoughts and physical sensations have arisen from time to time, which had passed away. Cannot remember what the thoughts were about. Sometimes the breathing was subtle. At other times, it felt near nostrils. Sat for 55 minutes. Calm and peaceful feeling continued for a while after the session. Mindful walking. Walked to the town for an appointment. The awareness naturally was in sensations of moving feet, sounds heard, and the walking continued. Observed how the walking slowed down when nearing the crossing. Felt the body weight supported by both feet while waiting for the lights to change. Walking resumed automatically to the destination. Mindfulness present when returning home too. Walked for 40 minutes, 20 minutes to the appointment, and another 20 minutes to the return journey. Mindfulness during the day. The difference between last week and this week was showing. Last week at the silent retreat, the conditions were favorable for the practice. Clear timetable, practicing as a group, Dhamma talk, and feedback for questions and reports by the teacher, all done in an organized manner. No housework or professional work during the week too. Having returned home and finding different conditions, it needed more effort to find time for formal sitting and walking. However, soon the ability to be mindful with various tasks has returned. Among background noise, the mind is unaffected, continuing the mundane tasks and duties, and the mindfulness comes and goes from time to time. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback and merits to organizers. Consalamai. End of report, Bhante. Please give.
Okay, now that very first part in the sitting, you are mentioning that the thoughts came, but you can't recall the content of the thoughts, right? Even in your daily walk, let's say walking to an appointment, when you walk mindfully, you know that you are walking, you know that you are crossing the road, you know that you are reaching. That way, mindfully, you go. But at the end of the walk, you might feel that I don't recall much from the walk. I feel like, was I ignorant? You may ask yourself, right? So that doubt appears. Even, I think it was today. Yeah. Today, somebody was saying that during my sitting hour, I could feel a lot of thoughts. I know the thoughts came. I had various bodily sensations. But after the hour, when I got up, I can't recall them properly. So was I not mindful? That's the doubt, right? So usually the memory, it happens when your mind is either in the past or the future. You have to go through this analyzing part, then only these things go into your memory, right? There's a processing part. You compare, you forecast that day only these things go into your memory. So if you are truly mindful, probably not initially, when you are a seasoned practitioner, if you are truly mindful, you realize that things don't go into your memory. You sit for 1 hour, you walk for 1 hour, during that time you felt them, but after you can't recall. Right? So that process is important. That process is good. It's not a bad thing. You don't have to worry that you might be getting dementia and you know you can't work. That's not the thing. What happens is that those things are, that time you process them. Most of these details, they are just ordinary details. You just have to process them on the spot. During walking, you have to process that information. So you mindfully, you are processing. You are crossing the road. But afterwards, you don't need them in your memory. So that's the magic of mindfulness. It frees up your capacity for the real things. The mind's capacity, it free up the capacity for the real things. Right, so that's important. That's important. That's why when you feel that the walking time, I was aware, but I don't recall much. Sitting time thoughts were there, but I don't recall what the thoughts were. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And you have to realize your mind is really getting hold to the concept of mindfulness. The real mindfulness is really little by little appearing. And the real mindfulness is there, you are mindful on the spot. You do things properly, but you don't have to look back and doubt, look back and recall. That's not necessary. And your mind's capacity will be freed for much greater things, right? So that's important. Don't think that you won't be able to work, you won't be able to function. That's not how it works. The menial information will be processed on the spot and let go. So you can deal with the real things. The energy, the capacity is freed up, right? So that's the first comment. Then retreat versus home, the comparison, right? So we can't live in a retreat center, no? Right? So that's the issue, right? That permanently you can't be there. It's only like a limited number of days we are taking you in. Even here, we have a limited number of days. 10 days, that type of a limit is there. But little by little, when you become a seasoned practitioner, you can go up to like 3 months even. But somehow, one day, you'll have to go back home. Right? So what we are suggesting is, understand these things, they are two different levels of practice. Right? So when you are in a retreat center, you get used to that. When you are back at home, you get used to that. So what we are saying is, time to time, go to retreats. Again, return home. Adjust to that new condition. Again, go to a retreat. Adjust to that condition. That way, you have to take this practice. If you simply live in a retreat center forever, then you too get fed up with it. That's what happens to monks, you know. They get fed up living in a retreat center or a monastery. Right? So they are always wanting to go out, waiting to go out, right? So that's not gonna work. Staying in a forest forever, it won't work. Usually there's this traditional idea, a misconception of the practice saying that you leave everything behind, you go to a forest and you meditate. And you live there peacefully. There's this romantic picture is presented. But you do it in real world, and sometimes you go crazy, right? In reality, it is not that romantic. So what we suggest is you can't live in a forest monastery forever. You have to go into a retreat, do the practice, and then return to your home and see how the practice is helping you. Again, after a few months, you go into a retreat. Again, see that nature. There's this book, Zarathustra, Nietzsche. Zarathustra was meditating in a forest or an isolated place. And after so many years, so many months, one day he decided, today I'll go to the fish market. Right, fish market is noisy, fish market is crowded, fish market is full of worldly people. But if your peace is real, then it shouldn't be shaken in a fish market. Right? If your peace is fake, if your peace is due to lack of outside objects, it could be that, then it's not real. But if your peace is real, then it shouldn't be shaken just because you go to a fish market, just because you go to the society, right? So that's the idea. Don't stay in a retreat forever. Don't stay in a monastery forever. Go out and see. Go to the world and see. Then the other extreme is that always staying in a household. That too is another extreme, you know. That's how worldly people think. They think that this is my place. I have to stay there forever. Right? But that also not gonna work. Right? So whoever that's staying in a household, we tell them, go to a retreat. Whoever trying to live in a monastery forever, we tell them, go home. Two extremes, right? So again and again, you go to a retreat every few months, go back home, adjust to the new environment. Again, after a few months, you come back. That way, you have to season yourself in the practice. And that's how you can find true peace. Otherwise, just something appears like peace, but that is not lasting. If your practice is true, it should be true either in a monastery or a household. Right, so this is a good way to check. I go to a monastery, I go to a retreat, I feel peaceful. Can I protect my peace when I return home? Maybe not in the same scale, but still, you adjust to the new balance. Right, that's the idea. So you can't get the balance of a retreat center when you come back home. That's not possible. Instead, you have to adjust to the new situation, new balance you have to find. Again, when you go to a retreat, that's a different balance, right? So don't stay at home forever. Go to a retreat. Don't stay in a monastery forever. Go to a household. And you have to try these two things time after time. And then only you'll become a seasoned practice. A seasoned practitioner, wherever they are peaceful. Whether at home, a household, whether in a forest.
Thank you, Bhante. I'll move on to the next report. It's actually an experience shared by another Daika. Daily mindfulness. Driving back from a retreat conducted by Venerable Dhammajiva, I was in a minor accident getting on to a slip road joined by a motorway. A driver hitting me on the front passenger side, overtaking me on the left. The initial reaction in the mind was, oh no. This was followed by a calm feeling, despite the other driver getting down very aggressively and saying it was your fault. I had noted my car was not really damaged and just replied, is your car damaged, in a calm manner, to which she said, definitely, definitely. I replied, well, mine doesn't appear to be, so shall we see what happened to yours? There did not seem to be any damage to hers either. She calmed down and said, we seem to have got away with it. We asked each other if we were okay, and she said she felt a bit wobbly due to the shock. I asked her if she felt okay to drive home, and she wished me a safe drive and vice versa, and we went our way. On reflection, I felt the underlying calmness helped to diffuse a potentially volatile situation. With gratitude to Bhante and the organizers.
It feels like a human way of resolving a conflict. Yeah, usually there are animal ways of resolving a conflict, you know. The cats, they fight. They fight, they bite, right? That's how you usually resolve conflicts. Those road rage videos, when you go and see them, it's funny. The very people who are in those videos, they might be shameful afterwards seeing their own behavior on social media, right? So this sounded more like the human way of resolving a conflict, right? So imagine if you have taken a different approach towards her, then of course things will escalate, right? So that's true. That very approach could make a huge difference, right? So that's the magic of the practice. That's the magic of the practice. When you have that approach, you realize even these type of situations, you can resolve them in a human manner, right? Then the result of the retreat, you have seen on the spot, right? Spending few days, spending time in practice, how it helped you. How it helped you. Imagine if it wasn't, you weren't coming from a retreat. Maybe it would be different. A different state of your mind. It could have been different, right? So whatever the conflicts, problems that come, we can deal with them wisely. That's the very idea of practice. Some people say when you're mindful, you won't get into troubles. You won't get into accidents. And the non-practitioners, whenever practitioners, they get into trouble, they get into accidents. The worldly people, they are not practicing, but they come and blame you. They tell you, you are a meditator, see what you have done. You are a meditator, see your mindfulness. That way they blame. Even the family members, they do that sometimes. If one person is meditating in a family, the others will always find fault and tell you that you are a meditator, but you have done this. You are a mindfulness practitioner, but see, your mindfulness is not there. So those judging, those finger pointing comes. Mostly people think that when you are mindful, you can't make mistakes. That's not what we are saying. That's not what we are saying. Of course, you can minimize them when you are mindful. That can be done. But still, you would make mistakes. Still, sometimes the mindfulness slips. That happens. Mindfulness is also not permanent. It too is impermanent. Most people think that they try to make everything impermanent and mindfulness permanent. That's not how it works. You make mistakes, you get into accidents, but it would be easier for you to deal with them and you would move on much faster. That's the very idea. Even Venerable Ananda is the greatest person at Buddha's time, greatest disciple of mindfulness, right? The ones who had mindfulness, he was the greatest, right? But during some incident, Sangha blames him, telling that you have done this mistake. Ananda says, I was unmindful during that time. Sorry. That's his response. Right? So you have to understand, mindfulness too is impermanent. So you make mistakes. You get into accidents. You are human. But still, it would be much easier for you to deal with these incidents, mistakes, accidents. You deal with them wisely, and it would be much easier for you to move on. What happens to most people is that they get into accidents, they get into mistakes, but they can't move on. It takes so much time for them to move on. Even after years, they recall that very incident and blame you. You have done this years ago. You have said this about me years ago. That way they blame. But for a practitioner, it would be much easier to move on. You deal with them wisely when you get into accident, and you move on much easier. So that's the practice. That's the practice. We are happy to hear your experiences, and we are happy that you got to participate in a retreat with Mahathero. Continue this way, and we can revisit after a few weeks, few months, and see how the practice has progressed.
Thank you, Bhante. Someone who's a participant today has sent me another message of an experience. Can I quickly read it to you, Bhante?
Okay, yeah.
Theruvan Saranai, Bhante. In sitting, walking, and day-to-day activities, it is like no difference. And the same nature, it's like being aware of what is going on, forgetting things from time to time, and no worries even on that. Wanted to share this experience as I noted in each situation. A kind of an unshaking nature, as was evident, that doesn't disturb the action outer. It was ants, and while cleaning, I didn't feel the need to remove them while not harming them. Just cleaned, but no, not shaken inside, even though some ants died. Next incident was trying to remove some flies which were flying inside the room, trying several times to remove it safely, but I couldn't. Anger in a subtle way arose as still the massa was roaming around inside the room. Then at once I saw the fly on a pot, and suddenly speedy commanding voice came, hit him, then hit it and it died. While thought came to hit, while hitting and after hitting, noticed an unshaking state, the just witnessed what happened. Same thing happened regarding the mosquitoes, at once just hitting. Early in these situations, thoughts came as this is not good to do, and now these don't arise anymore. After that little voice arises, oh, you did it, no worrying either. For that also no reaction, just observing. Sometimes there are incidents that I feel to rescue and that action is not based on merit or it is good to do so, just rescue with no reason arising in mind. But in the past, I used to not kill any insects based on precepts. But now it is different, as experiencing from above time to time. Sometimes I feel like the good and bad concept is no longer working. Feel like in situations, action is happening and just have no control over it. Just witnessing it. That also varies sometimes. Feel like nothing is relevant and like away from it all. That's the end of it, Bhante.
Okay, so this is an interesting idea to discuss with a matured audience in the practice sense. So mostly when we work, when we like do even good things, we have this intention of doing good, right? So let's say those dana and probably ceremonies at a temple, katina, those things, people are going there trying to do good. And sometimes they end up fighting over it, right? So one person was telling that at temple, they fought over katina. Funny, right? So that's how it is. That's how it is, right? We are not recommending such things. Here we have no katina ceremony. Usually the foreign temples or branches, the temple you go to it only during the katina period. That's like your puja, annual puja kind of a thing, right? But here we don't have katina. Here we don't have katina. You don't need those surface things if you know the real practice, right? So most people, they have this intention of doing good. They do dana, they want to do good, right? And some rich ladies, they go to this orphanage or something during their birthday, and you know, they take photos, they give things to those orphaned children, and they share those photos on their Facebook account, right? Philanthropy, right? So that's how it is. That's how it is. Most people, they want to do good. And Alan Watts, he says, path to hell is paved with good intentions. Path to hell is paved with good intentions, right? So that's how the worldly idea. But the practitioner, they are not trying to do good. They are not trying to do good. They just, you know, be mindful. They function. They do according to the situation. They perform the act, right? But they have no intention of doing good. They give dana sometimes. They be generous. But they have no expectation of that dana. No expectation of, you know, heavenly returns or something like that. And so they give, depending on the situation, and there's a need, they give. But they have no expectations. And Buddha says that's the proper way to give dana. And if you give that way, then you'll get the best results. Otherwise, we are generous in our mind. We are holding on to something else. It's always a give and take, right? You give so I can get some much better return, right? So that's how the world works. So the practitioner, they try to let go of these things. Then let's say, whenever you are sweeping, walking, initially the beginners, they worry a lot about insects. They say, I can't walk on this walking path because there are ants. I can't do this task because there are worms in the soil. Right? So they say, they complain. They say that I am protecting this sealer. So I don't want to do this. It's good initially, but that person is still struggling with sealer. They have to understand the nature of the seal or the behind things behind sila. When let's say killing an animal, you have to have the intention behind it, right? So that intention matters. So walking somewhere, stepping on an ant, that intention is not there. Something biting you, you somehow try to, you know, get out of that pain, the creature dies. But the intention was to, you know, it was a reaction to get out of that pain, right? So that those type of things are not initially prominent, but with time you realize was there an intention, right? That realization is important. Otherwise, what happens is that the very sila that is supporting the practice initially becomes a hindrance later on. They get stuck in sila. But the true nature is different. True wholesomeness is different. True wholesome mind, it doesn't try to do wholesome. It doesn't try to do good. True wholesome mind, it doesn't try to, you know, protect anybody. But in the process, everything is protected. In the process, it does good. Right? So that's the idea. And in your experience, there are certain parts where you still make mistakes. You realize that the intention was there to kill. You can't put that responsibility towards somebody else's voice. No, you have to take the responsibility for that. You realize that you have made a mistake. That's fine. But you, after realizing the mistake, you don't worry over it. You acknowledge the mistake and you move on. That's related to our earlier comment as well, earlier feedback as well. You make mistakes, you get into accidents, but you are much better acknowledging them and moving on, right? So that change is important. Still make mistakes. That in your report, it's prominent. You mentioned it. I still make mistakes. These things happened. Of course, they are mistakes, but we know that they are mistakes and we try to do better in future, right? No point in crying over those incidents. Realize due to something, due to the that annoyance I got, I did this. That's fine. But tomorrow is a new day. Tomorrow again, you get the chance to face it, right? So that way you approach. That is the very approach. Probably in a way, you don't have this very urge to get rid of all these mistakes. There's no urge, you know, you accept this, you accept that there are mistakes, but you somehow continue. And one day you realize now those mistakes even, they are not happening, right? The practitioner, usually a seasoned practitioner, they don't try to exhaust themselves trying to correct everything. They don't try to go after 100%. That's not possible. Right? Instead, there'll always be like 10-15% of mistakes, 10-15% of issues. That 80-20 rule, Pareto principle, you might recall the earlier topic. You get 80% results. That's enough. That's enough. No need to go after the remaining 20% and exhaust yourself. So we are human. You have to understand we are not trying to become some strange creature, a perfect creature. That's not possible. Probably the AI would do, not us. Right? If you want to find perfection, probably AI is the way. Humanness, always you are with fault. Humanness have mistakes, right? So we accept them, we try to do better in future, right? That very acceptance, that very process will let you know now you are much better off. Now you have even further advanced, right? You don't do even these mistakes. So that's the idea. That's the idea. Most people, the problem is that they try to finish it within a day, within a month, within a year. They want to do this. At the end of the year, they want to become perfect at everything. That's not how it works. Instead, you do a decade. You do another decade. Right? You do as long as you live. What else is there to do? So that way, continue. Let us know in the future as well. It's good to, you know, share such experiences.
Thank you, Bhante. There are all the reports we've received, and also we are out of time now, so we can't unfortunately allow any questions. But if you do have any questions, email it to us. We will keep it for next week, and we will present it to Bhante then. I will then end this session and hand over to Nadeep. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Sonali, and much merits. Just to conclude the program, I would like to acknowledge the contribution and blessing from the Chief Bhante, Most Venerable Uriyagama Dhammadiva Dhammajiva Mahathero, and also the all the Venerables from Nisaramane Phoras Monastery. I would also like to pass the merits to Venerable Homagama Dhammakusala Thero for giving us valuable Dhamma talk and also valuable instruction to follow through our practice. And also, I would like to acknowledge the contribution from all organizers in spite of their busy lifestyle, helping continuation of this program. And also, I would like to thank all the participants and also the program will be conducted every Saturday, UK time 7:30 a.m. and from Sri Lanka time 1 p.m. and also from Melbourne it's 5:30 p.m. That's pretty much it. I would like to conclude the program now. I would end the program now and also inviting all of us to join next week at the same time. Wish you all mindful week and happy and mindful.